Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get an update on library activities with Jamie Bursell and Beth Weigel. Perseverance Theater will highlight They Don't Talk Back. Dr. Kevin McCauley and Katie Chapman from NCADD will preview tonight's talk at 360 about addiction. We'll learn about the second Shaped Note workshop on Saturday, February 11th. And Kelly Hansen, a counselor at Floyd Dryden Middle School, will be here to talk about the Kindness Campaign and the Think Kindness Award. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. As severe winter weather continues to impact northwest Montana, the Blackfeet Nation has issued an emergency declaration. Nikki Willett of Montana Public Radio reports.
Blackfeet Tribal Business Council Chairman Harry Barnes issued the emergency declaration Monday after more than 4 feet of snow buried some parts of the reservation. Barnes says the tribe is working with all entities to provide responder and public safety. He urged people to shelter in place and stay off roads and highways. The emergency declaration kicks the tribe's emergency operation plan into effect, which provides for first responder, snow removal and plowing, and communication with the public until the council lifts the declaration. The storm caused the Montana Department of Transportation to close Highway 2, a main travel artery west of the Blackfeet Reservation, on Monday. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Willett.
A South Dakota Senate committee is bringing a lobbying bill to the full Senate. The bill allows tribal elected officials the opportunity to speak in meetings without having to register as lobbyists. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
State Tribal Relations Secretary Steve Emery says elected officials from communities across South Dakota do not have to register as lobbyists. A mayor or council member from any town or city may address committees on bills as they choose. Emery says that makes it easier for those leaders to comment on bills that would help or hurt their interests.
As the law stands, elected leaders from South Dakota tribes are not given the same affordance to testify before legislative committees. Rather, elected leaders of tribes are required to register as a private lobbyist in order to present to a legislative committee. Senate Bill 74 was drafted to address what we see as an oversight and give the elected leaders of tribes in South Dakota the ability to appear before the legislature to present local issues facing state citizens within their constitution.
Senate Bill 74 passed the committee unanimously and now moves to the full South Dakota Senate. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Mole Lake Sakaugan Chippewa Tribe and a renewable energy developer have finished up a project in the community after nearly a year and a half of work. Leaders of the Wisconsin tribe hope it will lower energy costs. WXPR's Miranda Vanderleest has more.
Tribal leaders paired up with SunVest to secure a couple million dollars in grants from the U.S. Energy Department and the Housing and Urban Development Department. Vice President of Operations Adam Gussie says panels have been installed on 50 homes and 19 businesses, and he says Mole Lake will be the only community in the state to have solar panels at this capacity.
It varies by house, depending on their usage, but the average is 85%, and it's on 50% of the homes that the tribe owns. For the commercial businesses, they have now solar arrays on 19 of their commercial facilities. There's only one or two commercial buildings that they own and operate that don't have solar on them, and that percentage is closer to about 25%. Because they use so much more power.
Gussie says most of the state has less than 1% of its generation coming from solar energy. Jeff Ackley Jr. is the tribal administrator and says it's a step in the right direction.
This is the largest per capita solar install in the Midwest, which is pretty cool that our Sakaugan Chippewa community can be put on a map for that. Even though that we're a small community, we also try to plan ahead for future down the road for our kids and our future generations that are going to be coming after us.
Ackley says the solar panels will save them about $100,000 a year. For National Native News in Northern Wisconsin, I'm Miranda Vanderleest.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Beth Weigel from the Juno Public Libraries and Jamie Bursell and Colette Costa to talk about a really interesting thing called Science on Screen coming up on Thursday. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Thanks.
So nice to have all of you here. I'll let you start, Beth. What's going on at the library in general?
Yeah, let me tell you about a few things that are happening before we lay down all the info on this awesome program on Thursday. So February is a really great month for people at the library, because if you are one of those people who maybe checked out some books and kept them a little longer than you should have, or maybe you lost a book and you've got some fines, and I'm talking fines up to $100.
Wow.
This is it. This is the time to bring in some canned food, and we will help you
debt
forgive
forgiveness?
Your fines.
Debt forgiveness? Yes. Wow. Library book debt forgiveness.
That's right. Yeah, so any item of non-perishable food, so either a nice, you know, high-quality canned food or some macaroni, you know, dried macaroni or something
vegetables.
Like that. Right, vegetables in a can would be great, and you'll get $5 for every item
wow.
that you bring. I know, it's awesome.
That's for the whole month of February?
For the whole month of February.
Any branch?
Any branch. You
okay.
can bring that in. Up to 100, we'll forgive up to $100 in your fines. And this is really geared towards people, you know, we're doing this for two reasons. One, we want to get people who have become barred from using the library because they have more than $10 in fines, because that's when we say, sorry, no more circulation privileges for you. So we really want to get those people back in the library. And then also we want to help the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, because they, I guess, apparently sent out like 10,000 more pounds of food in January than they got in. So we need to help them restock. And apparently hunger is a year-round thing, not just during holidays.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
Okay. What else is going on?
So we have a variety of other things going on this month as well. We have obviously ongoing programs like Storytime happening at 11 a.m. at the Downtown Library and the Douglas Library and the Valley Library on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Toddler Times on Mondays, Tlingit Language Learner Groups on Monday night, and Cuentacuentos Infantil, our Spanish story time, happens on Monday nights at 5:30. And we also have our third Thursday Downtown Family Night happening on the 16th. And then we've got our we're having a Black History Month program next week on the 14th as well. Poet Roger Reeves will be here. He's from Chicago, and he has a new book of poetry out called King Me, and he's actually going to come next Tuesday, so I won't say too much more about that, but put that on your list of things to do for Valentine's Day.
Excellent. A lot going on. Where's the best place to find that? On your Facebook page, on your website?
Facebook page and our website, yeah, juno.org/library.
Okay. What about Science on Screen? Tell me about how this was inspired.
Well, we actually had applied for this last year. Colette brought this to my attention. She was like, hey, I know about this really great program called Science on Screen. It's for independent theaters, but I'm not a nonprofit, so do you want to partner with me? And I was like, all right.
Exactly. That was the entire conversation. Just like that.
I know. And then I said, okay, I think we can make that happen. And so we applied last year, and we were given the grant, and we had a really fun season last year. And then we reapplied for the grant again this year, and they actually really love us. And this is the Coolidge Corner Theater and Alfred P. Sloan Foundation fund this grant. And so we got the grant again. And this year we have another great series of speakers and films lined up. And we're kicking off on Thursday. That's this Thursday, the 9th, with our first speaker, Jamie Bursell. And the title of her talk, it's going to be at 6 o'clock at the Downtown Library, is Wax On, Wax Off. You have the title over there, actually.
Manifesting Mental Strength to Promote Physical Performance.
Yeah, and can you guess what maybe movie we're going to screen with that title?
Wax on, wax off?
Yeah. Wax on, wax off.
Karate Kid.
That's Yay! Right. You're so smart.
Yeah. And the idea of Science on Screen is that you pair a speaker that can speak about the science that's sort of like, you know, it doesn't even have to be that directly connected to the film. But and then you choose, you know, classic films, documentary films, and things like that to go with it. And you have the speaker introduce that film and kind of speak to the science of it. But we've changed the format just slightly, and so we have a longer talk at the library, and Jamie's going to do that, and she'll be there at 6 o'clock, and she can tell you a little more about what she's going to talk about. And then we'll show the film for free at 7 o'clock at the Gold Town.
Free.
Okay. Jamie, I see you have an MA in psychology. You've taught anatomy and physiology at UAS, among other things, and you're an athlete extraordinaire, it looks like.
Pretty much. Thank you.
We had a different title, but we're not going to say that one on the air right now. What are you most proud of? What's sort of your favorite go-to sport?
My favorite go-to sport is triathlon right now. I love the combination of swimming, biking, and running, and I love the training effect that it has, in that if you train in one discipline and fatigue yourself, you can always go to another discipline and still get a training effect. And one thing that happens in this aerobic type of training is the impact from running does need some time. You need some time to have the training effect and build your body stronger, because it does break down with the impact. But then you can go to biking, which has less impact, and add some additional aerobic work, and then for swimming too, even lower impact, and you can get another additional aerobic benefit.
Okay. And so you're going to do this talk at 6 p.m. You said it's going to be at the downtown library?
That's right.
And then you're going to walk over to the Gold Town?
Yep.
Okay, at 7 to watch Karate Kid. It's called Wax On, Wax Off, Manifesting Mental Strength to Promote Physical Performance. How did you choose The Karate Kid, and how did this talk sort of...
It had nothing to do with The Karate Kid.
Got it. So your talk is catered to this. How did it come about?
Right. Well, I think Beth and I knew each other from the University of Alaska Southeast. And
I've been in her training triathlon camp, too. I did the Aquaman triathlon, and I finished last. So she trained me
No,
up
you
too.
Finished.
I finished. That's right. Dot,
dot, dot. Last.
Right. So I'll be integrating my knowledge of physiology. We'll be talking about the physiological changes that happen in the body during training. And then I'll really hit on sports psychology and ways that people can use their mindset and mental training techniques to enhance their performance.
Okay.
Just like Mr. Miyagi. There will also be a side demonstration on how to catch flies with chopsticks.
Wow. By you, call that?
Mostly, except... By flies, I mean...
Popcorn with chopsticks.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just going to throw popcorn at your face, and you catch it with a chopstick.
This goes out to any of you. Who would benefit from going to this on Thursday?
Smart people. Well, people who like Ralph Macchio.
I think people who are everyday people trying to reach their health and fitness goals would really benefit from this. And that was why when I joined her triathlon training group, that was kind of what I was doing that year. I was like, I just have some regular old goals. I want to meet them, and this seems like a good way to keep me disciplined, because sometimes I'm not as disciplined as I'd like to be, right? And then I think there are people out there who are these ultra runners and peak performance people who are really trying to reach, you know, something a little bit higher than the average person is looking towards, and I think they would really benefit too, because Jamie is an amazing athlete and she's got so much knowledge, and I think just putting all that together is really informative and can really, you know, help inspire anybody who's looking to either reach regular goals or reach their peak performance.
Okay, well, I wish we had more time, but before we go out, Jamie, can you give us maybe one highlight of something that you'll be talking about or focusing on Thursday?
Sure. One of the things I'll be talking about is embracing pain, and maybe reevaluating what pain means to a person and how they perceive it, and try looking at their own pain as from the viewpoint of an outsider.
Okay.
And then just say quick that the one of the points of this whole program, the Science on Screen, is to promote science, but it's also to promote classic and cult films and classic documentary things. So that's kind of my angle on the whole thing, is to also say that this is a great kind of, I think, neoclassic slash cult movie that if you've only seen the remake, please, for God's sakes, come and see the original.
Right.
The Rebirth of Pat Morita. And, 7 o'clock, Gold Town, free, 4 o'clock, Downtown Library.
No, Valley Library.
Valley Library Saturday. On Saturday.
So. And we'll also have some other things coming up in this series, including Michelle Ridgeway and The Abyss. So Michelle will be talking about deep sea, you know, exploration and her submersible. And then we're also going to have another speaker in April.
Seems like a great program, a great partnership. So thank you all very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome,
Paulette. Such a good job here.
And we expect you to be there, Scott, to show us how to do that kick you were talking about
earlier. The crane kick.
Yeah. Crane kick.
6 p.m.
Mm-hmm. We'll have a crane kick
at the Downtown Library. Mm-hmm. And then popcorn catching with chopsticks.
Cobra Con!
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Use books and support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Tuesday, February 7th. That's about 21 minutes after the hour. And in the studio now is Lena Simmons, and she's going to tell us about the Second Shape Note Workshop this Saturday at Holy Trinity Church. Welcome to the show, Lena.
Thank you. So do you know what shape notes are?
I think so. There's like a square, a triangle, and a circle, and each one means a different note.
Right. It all started 18th century America, where people didn't have musical instruments, and there weren't a whole lot of people who were educated, you know, with serious, you know, music. So they needed a way to teach people to sing and be able to read music quickly, especially in small country churches, you know. And so they came across, there are four shapes. There's a circle and a triangle. Well, actually, it's a flag, and a rectangle and a diamond. And that's all you need. And you learn the differences between how high and low you go, you know, depending on what the shape is. It doesn't matter where they are on the staff. So you don't have to read serious music to be able to sing shape note.
It's like My First Music,
something like that,
right?
Yeah, I mean, it was very popular, you know, 18th, early 19th century. It began to die out a little, although it never did die out totally in the South. And in the last 20 to 25 years, there's been a resurgence of interest because it's very much an American kind of music. And
sounds very accessible.
It's very accessible. You don't have to worry about being piano here and forte here because you just sing it all at the top of your lungs. You know, and that's perfectly acceptable. It's a very endorphin raising music, you know, when you sing that much at the top of your voice.
Is it mostly for gospel?
It's mostly gospel. It's not all, but most of the tradition now is gospel because it was kept alive in some of the old Southern Primitive Baptist and other types of churches. And although there are things like probably the most familiar name people would know would be William Billings, and he wrote lots of sacred stuff, but he also wrote lots of patriotic tunes and whatever. In fact, one of his tunes was put up as to be the national anthem at one point in time, you know.
What are some other popular tunes that people might recognize?
Oh, Amazing Grace.
Okay.
Poor Wayfaring Stranger, Wondrous Love. They might not know the tune name, which is what you do in Sacred Harp. You do the tune name. So if you wanted to sing Amazing Grace, you wouldn't say, I want to sing Amazing Grace. I want to sing New Britain, because that's the name of the tune. My favorite is Northfield, you know. And the first line of that is, how long, dear Savior, oh, how long shall this bright hour delay, you know. And so it's not hard. You have to get out of your mind the fact that you look at the music and you look at where the note is on the line. You have to be able to, you sing with your ear and not with your eye in many cases in shape note. Because it doesn't matter where your beginning note is on the staff. Your beginning note is wherever the song leader decides it's going to be. Because he or she will go, da, 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 da. And that's everybody's note. And it could be, you know, way higher on the staff of the music, but you're going to sing it down there because that's where they start it.
Okay, I forgot to mention you are the choir director at Holy Trinity,
among other capacities in the community. I like music, what can I say? And this is fun stuff to sing.
Yeah, I was just going to say, what inspired the first class?
Our present rector lived in Sitka for years and years and years. And there's a quite strong shape note community in Fairbanks, Anchorage, and in Sitka. In fact, the state president lives in Sitka. And so he fell in love with it while living there and wanted to bring it over here. And I said, well, I know I grew up singing this way, but I don't want to lead it, you know. And he says, well, I'll just bring Carrie over. Carrie Lundgren, who has the association in Sitka. So she came over last November, and she's coming again this weekend, and it's the sort of thing, if people were interested in doing it more often, we could certainly do it more often.
Okay.
But it's fun. You know, it's a very accessible sort of singing. You sing the square. I don't know if you've ever seen that or not, but we'll move all the pews in the church and form a big square, and we'll have trebles. You don't have sopranos. You have trebles, because both men and women can sing the treble line, and they sit across from the basses, and then you have the tenors, which you also can have women tenors, and they sing the melody. Sopranos don't have the melody. The tenors have the melody, which is maybe why I like singing treble, because I actually get to do harmony for a change. And then they sit across from the altos. And the song leader is in the center, who beats time and chooses the key that you're going to sing it in. And if you've never been in the center, I'm hoping that we'll be able to pull some people into the center this weekend, because we didn't do that the last time. Because if you've got a group of people around you and they're all singing right at you, it's body tingling. It can be really cool.
I bet. Yeah. All right, so this is Saturday. What time does it start?
We'll start at 10, but you can come for any part of it that you want.
We'll
start at 10 and teach newbies, you know, the shapes and how to do it. And we'll sing until noon, and then we'll feed you. You can't have a sing without having dinner on the grounds. And I'm not going to do a dinner on the grounds outside here. Thank you very much. But we will feed you, you know, and then we'll sing. After lunch, we'll sing again for another couple hours. And hopefully we'll end up about 3 o'clock.
Okay. Is there a cost?
No. We'll take a free will offering if you want to help defray Carrie's cost from Sitka. But it's free. You know, just come, enjoy yourself. If you wanted to bring something, you know, chips or something to go along with lunch, that'll be fine. But you know, it's basically to have a good time and to learn a very American style of music. I mean, this really comes out of the American tradition. And it's haunting. It's all full of, if you want to get technical about it, open fourths and open fifths. It's all over the place. And you learn it by, the first time you sing it through, you don't sing the words. You sing the solfege. So it's so, la, mi, fa. And that's your four notes. And everybody sings wherever their note is at that point in time. And then you go through and sing the words to it.
Who do you think would benefit from attending this?
Anybody who wants to sing. I mean, you don't have to be a trained singer. In fact, I've been to sings where a trained professional type singer comes in. And they have a real hard time. You know, because you have to, it's sort of like you sing Mozart with your left side of your brain, and then you sing this with your right. You know, it's sort of a dichotomy, because you really are singing more almost with your ear than you are with your eyes.
Okay.
And so it takes some people, it's like, you know, somebody was saying in the last one we had, I was sitting next to somebody in trebles, and she was having a little trouble. And she's going, but no, that's a C. We start on a C. And I go, no, we start on fa. And fa is wherever the song leader tells you fa is. So it's, and I don't want to make it sound intimidating, because it's not. You know, it's just a good time. I mean, you really do just sort of build up endorphins. Because it's just lots of fun to sing with that many people, and nobody's going to tell you, pipe down, you're too loud, because you can't sing this sort of stuff too loud.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Starts at 10 a.m.
We'll break about noon for lunch.
And describe where Holy Trinity is, if people don't know.
Holy Trinity is on the corner of 4th and Gold Street downtown. We're just 2 blocks down from the Capitol Building, 1 block down from Cathedral and St. Nicholas, and a block and a half or 2 blocks up from the Baranoff. So, you know, we're just
lunch
right
is
there.
Included.
Lunch is included. We did a couple of different soups last time. I don't know what we'll do this time, but...
Do people have to sign up in advance? No, just show up at 10.
Show up at 10. If you get there a little early, you can help us move the pews.
Make a donation if you can.
If you can.
All right. Lena Simmons, this sounds like fun. If somebody wants more information...
They can give me a call or go to our Facebook page.
All right.
I'm 789-4604.
Or Holy Trinity.
Holy Trinity's Facebook page would give them the events there.
Okay. That's on Saturday. Lena Simmons, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I'm going down to the river of Jordan. Oh, yes, I'm going down to the river of Jordan some of these days. I'm going down to the river of Jordan. I'm going down to the river of Jordan some of these days. I'm going to eat at the welcome table, oh yes. I'm going to eat at the welcome table some of these days. I'm going to eat at the welcome table. I'm going to eat at the welcome table some of these days. Heavenly choir, oh yes, I'm going to sing that heavenly choir some of these days. I'm going to sing that heavenly choir. I'm going to sing in the heavenly choir some of these days. I'm going to put on the silver slippers, oh yes, I'm gonna put on the silver slippers some of these days. I'm gonna put on the silver slippers. I'm gonna put on the down by my Jesus, oh yes, I'm gonna sit down by my Jesus some of these days. I'm gonna sit down by my Jesus. I'm gonna sit down by my Jesus some of these days.
From the tip-top of a black spruce, a white-winged crossbill sings a rapid-fire tribute to winter. He's got good reason to sing. Even in the cold, crossbills are nesting. Among virtually all our songbirds, the breeding season begins with the longer, warmer days of spring, and the seasonal bounty of insects, fruits, and seeds. But for crossbills, it's all about the food. When the evergreens hang heavy with snow and cones, crossbills can get all the calories they need for the demands of reproduction, courtship, egg laying, and feeding young. North America's two crossbill species, white-winged and red, are vagabonds, wandering in flocks until they find a suitable cone crop, where they might then stop to breed in small groups almost any time of year. Crossbills are finches, and yes, their bills do cross at the tip, an oddity that helps them pry and extract seeds from those nutritious cones of spruce, fir, pine, and tamarack. So even in the grips of winter, when most songbirds are months away from the breeding season, somewhere among the snowy conifers, crossbills are already warming up. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
The last 20 years produced an explosion of understanding about addiction and how our brains make pleasure-based decisions. Join NCAD Juno at 360 as Dr. Kevin McCauley explains how the brain constructs pleasurable experiences, what happens when this process goes wrong, and why this can have a dramatic impact on our ability to make proper choices. That's 6 p.m. Tuesday night, February 7th at 360 in the KTOO building.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 7th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Dr. Kevin McCauley and Katie Chapman, and they're here to talk about the PSA we just heard about tonight's talk at 360. Kevin, Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Katie, why don't you set us up? Tell us a little bit about Kevin. Tell us a little bit about NCADD Juno and how this all came to be.
Sure. So NCADD Juno, we are the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, the Juno affiliate. And our mission is to provide help and hope to people struggling with substance use disorders. We were familiar with Dr. McCauley because of his film, Pleasure Unwoven, that he produced. Our program has been using that film to help educate patients and families about addiction. And Dr. McCauley came up about, I think it was in 2006, my predecessor, Matt Felix, invited Dr. McCauley up to meet with the community and provide some education, and I was excited to invite him up again because a lot has happened and our community continues to struggle with addiction, and it's time to give them an opportunity to get some more education.
Hey, Dr. McCauley, you've been studying addiction for a long time. I think I remember in the beginning of Pleasure Unwoven, you said it was about a 10-year journey just to do that movie.
That's right.
I know you've done another one since then, Memo to Self. Tell us, what are you a doctor of, and how did this journey begin for you?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's wonderful to be back in Juneau. I had such a wonderful time the first time I was here. That the minute I made a second film, I wanted to send a copy up, so hopefully you'd invite me, and you did. Thank you. I started this journey not necessarily by choice. I was a flight surgeon in the Navy, so my job was to take care of a squadron of pilots. I had an F/A-18 Hornet squadron in the Marine Corps, and so I loved that job. I enjoyed it very much, but like a lot of people are experiencing right now, I had a surgery, and unbeknownst to me, unbeknownst to my doctor, I was one of those people, and it's about 10% of the general population, who respond differently to opioids. They have a very powerful, what we would call hyper-euphoric reaction. And unfortunately, it got its hooks into me pretty quickly. And within a very short period of time, I was actively addicted to opioids, and I was trying to quit on my own. I didn't really know anything about addiction. We were never taught anything about addiction in medical school, eventually I got caught. And so that sort of set me down the journey of why am I doing this? What is behind addiction? Is this a bunch of garbage that people are saying that it's a disease? And I wanted to try to parse that out. And that's been the journey for actually close to 18 years now. And as the research comes in, it just gets more and more fascinating.
And sort of at the beginning of that movie, you ask that huge question, right? Is addiction... is it a disease or is it a choice?
Right.
Right. And your argument is that it is indeed a disease?
It's a disease actually of the areas of the brain that make choices. That sounds a little mealy-mouthed, but the way we make choices is actually constructed in the brain from several different systems together. And there are a number of diseases in which they can go awry. Addiction is just one of them. Addiction does it in a way, I think, that makes us feel like we should be able to make the choice to not use, and many people do. Most people who have drug and alcohol problems, they just decide to stop, and they do. But there's a certain group of people who are susceptible to addiction where that process breaks down. The good news is that people get better, and they can do things that kind of rehabilitate that ability to make decisions, and that's what we call recovery.
Katie, can you sort of tell us why we should be worried about addiction in this community?
Yeah, I mean, it impacts all of us. Certainly, I have a lot of experience working with families at our affiliate, and the stories just from the family perspective are traumatic. I know that. Also in the work that I do, that people can get well, people do recover. And so I think that's why it's important for people to understand more about addiction, because I think they need to also know that people can get well and have hope.
Absolutely. There is this underlying theme of hope I hear in both of your conversations. Among other poignant points in your movie that I saw was, you know, when somebody is going to make a choice whether to use or not use, you said there's something that happens in the brain that actually makes everything else go away for this certain population, makes, you know, the thought of family, any of the consequences, all of that goes away for that craving. Can you clarify that a little for
us? That's right. It's a complex process, and it involves more than one system going wrong at the same time. The first system would be the system in our brain that values things. When people say, why would that person use drugs when they have their children or a job or they might go to jail? It's because the part of the brain that values things that you and I take for granted is broken. The other part of the brain is the area of the brain that essentially helps us remember things that are good for survival. This is an ancient, ancient area of the brain. You know, most successful mammals have it. And it essentially memorizes things that go along with anything that's good for survival. So all the cues, all the people, the times of day, the sights and smells at the moment when a person used drugs, they're still in there. And they can quite unconsciously trigger relapse in ways that the person might not really be aware of. And, of course, the third area of the brain is the part of the brain that really says, hey, I don't want to be doing this. You know, the social cognition areas of the brain, the parts of the brain that show me what my behavior looks like in the eyes of the people I care about, the part of the brain that's able to say, no, remember what happened last time, let's do something else, that part of the brain fails. And so when you have these three systems failing together, you have a person who looks like, may even feel like, they're making a completely conscious choice to use drugs when, in fact, it's not really what's going on.
Sure. You know, in the film, you used a lot of visual aids and made a lot of analogies. It seemed like it was a very understandable thing. Tell us what we can expect from tonight's talk.
Well, I think, you know, if I were to come to a beautiful community like yours, in the midst of our nation's unprecedented epidemic in prescription opioid use and overdose deaths, I would want that community, if I had an hour to speak to them, just to know the basics of what we've learned. I mean, it really is amazing science. It speaks very eloquently to the things that people go through. I think it informs parents and coworkers and friends of people who have addiction. They can say, oh, okay, wow, that's why he does that. And I think it's also important for policymakers to listen to because it gives, I think, a clear-eyed view of what solutions might actually work. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to try to take anyone who comes to the edge of what we know in medicine as of today, really, about addiction.
Okay. Will there be question and answer involved?
Absolutely.
Okay. And I know this will be recorded for statewide broadcast on 360 North, so that's exciting. Starts at 6. I imagine doors open at 5:30. Is that right? Does that sound right,
yes,
Katie?
Yes.
And is there any admission?
No, it's free. And I want to thank the Juno Community Foundation and the State of Alaska Division of Behavioral Health. With their support, we were able to bring Dr. McCauley up.
Okay, this sounds really interesting. Is there anything missing that either of you would like to let our listeners know about, besides that they should come at 6 p.m.?
I think you covered it.
You know, I do have one statistic that I looked up on NCADD, and I was telling you two before the show that we're working on a documentary here at 360 North on the challenges that formerly incarcerated people face in reentering society and really looking at that. One of those stats was 80% of offenders abuse drugs or alcohol. I found that statistic. Nearly 50% of jail and prison inmates are clinically addicted. Approximately 60% of individuals arrested for most types of crimes test positive for illegal drugs at the time of arrest. And I know that certainly Juno is not immune from that, so I think it really affects all of us here in this community.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you, Dr. Kevin McCauley and Katie Chapman from NCADD. The talk is tonight at 6 p.m. at 360 here in the K2 building at 360 Egan Drive, right by the Slam and right by the Jack. Admission is free. Please come on down. Thanks again, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 7th of February, 2017. It's the birthday of two famous Midwestern authors, Laura Ingalls Wilder and Sinclair Lewis. Sinclair Lewis, born in Sauk Center, Minnesota, 1885, author of Main Street, Babbitt, many other novels. He left Minnesota as soon as he could, headed east, worked for newspapers, for magazines, wrote some potboiler novels and a few serious ones. And then in 1920, when he was 35 years old, he walked up to H.L. Mencken and George Jean Nathan, editors of the magazine The American Mercury, and he put his arms around their necks, and he started yelling that he was the best writer in the country, and he'd just written the best book in the country that would be published in a week, and they ought to read it. He went on like this at high volume for about half an hour. Mencken and Nathan finally escaped. Mencken thought Sinclair Lewis was an idiot, but he read the book, and he was bowled over by it. The book was Main Street, came out in 1920, about a small town, Minnesota, Gopher Prairie, which Sinclair Lewis said was inhabited by, quote, a savorless people, gulping tasteless food, and sitting afterward coatless and thoughtless in rocking chairs prickly with inane decorations, listening to mechanical music, saying mechanical things about the excellence of Ford automobiles and viewing themselves as the greatest race in the world. It was a scathing satire of small-town American life and a big sensation. And within 9 months, it sold about 200,000 copies, and Sinclair Lewis became a very wealthy writer. And 2 years later, he published Babbitt, which was also very successful. In 1930, he was awarded the Nobel Prize for Literature. He wrote 22 novels in all, 16 of which involved Midwestern towns or Midwestern protagonists. He said he found creative inspiration, quote, sitting in Pullman smoking cars in a Minnesota village, on a Vermont farm, in a hotel in Kansas City or Savannah, listening to the normal daily drone of what are to me the most fascinating and exotic people in the world, the average citizens of the United States. Laura Ingalls Wilder, born just north of Pepin, Wisconsin, 1867, about which she wrote her book Little House in the Big Woods, which begins, once upon a time, 60 years ago, a little girl lived in the big woods of Wisconsin in a little gray house made of logs. She started writing these memoirs when she was in her 60s, and from them came a television series and an animated Japanese cartoon series called Laura the Prairie Girl and a musical. All of her books have remained in print since they were first published. They've been translated widely, and they have sold millions of copies. Here's a poem by Emily Dickinson, Tie the Strings to My Life, My Lord. Tie the strings to my life, my Lord, then I am ready to go. Just a look at the horses, rapid, that will do. Put me in on the firmest side, so I shall never fall. For we must ride to the judgment, and it's partly downhill. But never I mind the steepest, and never I mind the sea, held fast in everlasting race by my own choice and thee. Goodbye to the life I used to live, and the world I used to know, and kiss the hills for me just once, then I am ready to go. A poem by Emily Dickinson, Tie the Strings to My Life, My Lord. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training developed by scientists and game designers who turn cognitive research tasks into challenging games. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me in the studio now is Kelly Hansen. She's a school counselor at Floyd Dryden Middle School, and also Ayanna Brewer. She is the student body president or mm-hmm. the kindness crew. Mm-hmm. Did I get that right, Ayanna?
Yeah.
Well, welcome to the show, you two. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
So, Kelly, we've been hearing a little bit about the Year of Kindness. Tell us about how that looks, you know, in this kindness campaign there at Floyd Dryden Middle School.
Sure. So last fall, so not fall of 2016, but fall of 2015, we had a speaker come in. His name was Brian Williams, and he was with Think Kindness. And he has this organization that he's put together to promote kindness in schools and just in other communities as well. And he comes and he does presentations, kind of a larger thing. He puts, you know, kindness first, but challenges schools to do acts of kindness. One thing he does is he works with an organization or a school that's down in Africa. And one thing that he challenges schools to do is to donate shoes. And he brings those down there every couple years or so. So he came up and talked about kindness and what it looks like and kind of got kids kind of pumped up in a kind of a rally type assembly and got kids kind of charged with doing kindness and doing kind deeds. And so he came in the fall, and then we talked about, you know, kindness a little bit throughout the year. But this last fall in September, we picked up a program that he started called the Kindness Campaign or a Kindness Crew. And he's supplied us with a bunch of different ideas and different themes for each month and challenging kids to do very, like, purposeful acts of kindness. And he's kind of broken it down into each month we'll have, like, a different theme. And we have implemented it at Floyd Dryden, so getting our student council on board and doing different things very intentionally for acts of kindness. So each month we've been working on very targeted, specific kindness themes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Ayanna, I know you have a poem. Tell us about its background, if you would.
Okay. What is Kindness? By Leora Murray. Kindness is an ocean wave of warmth crashing over everything, and nothing is left dry. Kindness tastes like a well-baked cookie, sweet and soft. Kindness spreads like a cold, but is the best illness. Kindness feels like a warm spring day. Kindness is like an invisible fire, warming everyone's heart. Kindness elevates everyone's spirit, sending it past outer space into infinity. Kindness is a glue that holds us together.
Okay, and how was that inspired? Why did he write that?
I believe...
So, I can share a little bit about who wrote it. You want me to? Okay. So, Leora Murray, she is actually a sixth grader at our school.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, that's okay. She's a sixth grader. And what happened was Brian at Think Kindness, he challenged all the schools that are part of this kindness campaign and this Year of Kindness to write the definition of what kindness is. So this poem that Ayanna just read was the poem that won, I guess, nationally. He's got 75 schools in the nation that are part of this program, and he asked kids from all over these programs to submit what is kindness. And so he had a really hard time. He said in the top five, three of the top five picks were from Floyd, so that was super exciting. Ayanna actually submitted one, too, and it was really awesome. And so he decided to pick the best definition, I guess. And Leora Murray, she's a sixth grader, she wrote what she just read, and she won $250 from Think Kindness, but the catch was she couldn't use it on herself. Do you remember what it was, what the money would go for, Ayanna?
It would go, like, toward your school or something to help the school.
Yeah, or just others. So just money to help towards others. So you couldn't just pocket it. You had to use it to better the community and to help others. So she's kind of in the works of trying to figure out how she's going to use that.
Okay. It looks like now on the phone we have Principal Jim Thompson. Are you there?
Oh.
Hello. Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Anytime. Thanks for calling.
So the reason why I called in, I was meaning to be in the studio today, and my schedule is pretty hectic, but I just wanted to call in and kind of surprise Ms. Hansen. This week is National School Counselor Week, and I just wanted to, over the air, publicly thank her for all that she does for our school. She is amazing. When she came to this, came to me last year to talk about kindness and talking about culture and how we could impact kids' lives with this. I was on board straight away. She's very passionate about kindness. She models that. She's a great example. You know what, our staff, I call her our social-emotional leader of the school, because she really is. She cares for kids deeply. She does such a great job with our staff, with our kids. The kids respond to her. And, you know, like that poem that Leora wrote, is that kindness is infectious, and it's become infectious in our school. And I really appreciate Ms. Hansen and all that she does for our kids. So happy National School Counselors Week, Ms. Hansen. Thank you.
Thank you. That was kind.
Thank you.
And it's just kind of another example is that she gives kids opportunities to shine and to succeed. And Ayanna being in the studio today is another example. And talking over radio is not an easy thing, but Ayanna's done an amazing job, and we're proud of her. She does a great job with our students, and she's one of our outstanding kindness ninjas in our building. So good work for her.
Okay. So, Ayanna, can you tell us from a student's point of view, have you seen changes in the school this year? Are things going a little differently?
Yeah. A lot of students are being nice to others and, like, hanging out with different groups, and it's a good change to Floyd.
It sounds like it. How about from your perspective, Kelly?
Yeah, it's been really, really good. It's been positive. What's really neat about the program is we provide parents with information. So with every new kindness theme, we notify parents through email of what that theme is and how they can address it at home. And then also teachers get letters, too, of how they can kind of bring out that theme in their classrooms, too. So we're trying to get it from all different angles. And it's a conversation piece. It's something that we can talk about with kids on a daily basis, and it's something that we can refer back to, and the fact that kids are talking about it and reaching out to each other and just sort of embracing each other and being kind to each other. Obviously, there's some times where we struggle with that, but overall, I think, you know, at our school, it's made an impact because people are talking about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I wish we had more time. This is really interesting. I hope you'll come back and check in with us, you know, periodically throughout the year and let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ayanna, for coming on the show. Principal Thompson, thank you for calling.
And thank you, Scott.
Yeah, thank you so much. And also Kelly Hansen, thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Proud of you, too. Good work. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Forecast for tomorrow calls for mostly sunny skies with a high near 28.